If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Good morning, Steve Dale on WGN, Steve Dale's Pet World with Kara Burns. Kara is a veterinary technician, a certified veterinary technician, a specialist in nutrition, a multi award winner. I don't even have time to go through all those awards, Kara. And also with the Every Cat Health Foundation, where she is the chair elect. I have no idea what that means, except that you like to sit down on chairs. I don't even know.
Well, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Yes, this is Kara. So thank you, Steve, for that wonderful introduction. chair-elect means that I will be the next chair of the Every Cat Health Foundation. So, and what an honor that is. So thank you. For having me and for your involvement and getting me involved in the Every Cat Health Foundation.
Yeah, I'm guilty about that. But you know what? You and I both feel the same way about this organization, because if you've ever seen a cat, if you've ever known a cat, if you've ever had a cat, this organization is truly, over the years, many years, over 50, almost 60 years, responsible, Kara, for everything or near everything we know about cat health and behavior. And I'll let you explain from there.
Oh, it truly is amazing. I mean, the Every Cat Health Foundation, like you said, we're coming up in a couple of years on our 60th anniversary. I mean, that just blows my mind. And, you know, we are just the future of feline medicine truly does start with the Every Cat Health Foundation, because that is our goal, our mission. And, you know, we're the world's only nonprofit that's focused solely on feline health. So, yes, you and I love cats. There are a number of other dedicated board members and staff members that, you know, cats are everything. And so, again, I'm truly honored to be part of the Every Cat Health Foundation.
And to be clear, what we do is we fund, among other things, we fund cat health studies, of which the results have been phenomenal. If you go back many years, it's every vaccine your cat may get or may not get. It's understanding a kind of heart disease in cats that generally cats dilated cardiomyopathy. The cats generally don't get anymore, because we know how much of a amino acid called taurine to put into cat food. And the list goes on and on. But very recently, feline infectious peritonitis, or FIP, likely the number one cause of death for kittens, was considered fatal. And now it's considered treatable because of the money we raised. And many years ago, I began a fund called the Ricky Fund, because feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, that's a different kind of heart disease than the one I mentioned, is so prevalent in cats. And there are drugs that can help treat the symptoms or signs, but there really was no drug to treat the disease. And as I said, when our cat, Ricky, passed away, this was now over 20 years ago, I began this fund called the Ricky Fund. The result is that we've, over the years, raised a lot of money. Now, that disease, as common, incredibly common, by the way, as it is in cats, wasn't even fully understood. Now we fully understand it. And not only that, we have a drug now that can treat non-clinical, which means before the cat is showing signs of the illness, if you catch it early, a drug that actually treats the disease called Felicin-1. Your veterinarian will know about it. Now, the point of me rambling on about that, Kara, is that it worked. We created a fund. We raised a lot of money focusing on this one disease that wasn't even then understood. Well, another problem in cats is diabetes. And diabetes actually wasn't understood, and it was this organization that we're talking about now, called the Every Cat Health Foundation that said, no, no, it was Dr. Deb Greco, who I imagine you know as well.
Yes.
Who we funded. She was then at Colorado State University, and she proved, oh, you guys, you veterinarians, love you, but you got it wrong. This is not the right way to treat diabetes in cats. We now know better how to do that. But diabetes, which we'll talk about in a second, is incredibly common in cats. It is challenging at times, depending on the situation, to live with and deal with and provide insulin for, not to mention expensive, that cat that's diabetic, changing the diet. Well, cats don't always say, okay, I like the new diet. I mean, there's a lot to it when a cat is diagnosed with diabetes. And then, I'm trying to set you up here, and then Kara Burns at a board meeting said, I've got a plan. Tell us about that plan.
Yep. Well, you're absolutely correct in everything that you just recapped. You know, how far we've come with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and a lot of that was driven by the Ricky Fund and, you know, Every Cat Health Foundation's fundraising. It's amazing. And then the research that those funds paid for. So now, you know, we're talking about feline diabetes, and, you know, feline diabetes affects one out of four cats in North America, and actually, so we have U.S., Canada, and the United Kingdom. And so this is 2026, and many of us have either had a diabetic cat or we know of someone who has a diabetic cat. And we also know about diabetes in humans. And, you know, coming this far, there have been a lot of improvements and a lot of changes and advancements, but there's still no cure. And so, yes, I brought up at a board meeting that I wanted to have a focus on diabetes and endocrinopathies in general. But for me, it was about diabetes. And I wanted to spearhead, if you will, a fund similar to, you know, your Ricky Fund. And, you know, it was personal for me, obviously, because my cat, O'Malley Lowry Burns, did have diabetes. And he actually had insulin-resistant diabetes, and that resistance was caused by acromegaly, which is also known as hypersomatotropism.
Huh? And, what? Kara, I'm going to stop you here because we have to break. But also celebrate Irish cats because... We just slid by St. Patrick's Day. Yeah, I know. We've got to celebrate that. So we will do that and talk more about diabetes and cats, what we know, what we don't know. We will do that with Kara Burns when we come back on WGN. She is a registered veterinary technician and also a specialist in nutrition. We're talking about diabetes in cats with Kara Burns of the Every Cat Health Foundation. So, Kara, we can talk about why so many cats, and according to the data I read, there are more and more cats now being diagnosed with diabetes. Perhaps you can explain why that is the case, or why we think that's the case. We're pretty sure, I think. And then talk about what happens to these cats that are diabetic.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for that, because, you know, we need to address the why is this happening, to help then address and spearhead funding for a resolution. So, you know, current evidence is saying that approximately 75% to 80% of feline diabetes cases share a similar origin with human type 2 diabetes. And so what that really comes down to is lifestyle. So lifestyle meaning many of these cats are overweight or even obese. And that obesity, that being overweight, is a risk factor for feline diabetes. And then the remaining 20 to 25% develop very technical term, other specific types of diabetes.
Yeah.
And so what that is, other diabetes are secondary to the word that I just mentioned, hypersomatotropism. Oh, I messed that up.
Easy for you to say, maybe.
Yeah, tropism. Or there are some other conditions as well that can lead to or induce insulin resistance. And it's really there's another term for HS, which is easier to say, and that is acromegaly. And so that is what was leading my cat, or our cat, O'Malley Lowry Burns, to be resistant to insulin. And, he fought the fight for a good almost 5 years. O'Malley entered our lives as a kitten. He was found on the side of the road at 4 weeks of age. And he was not going to let that, stop him. A friend of our daughters, our oldest daughters, found him and brought him to us. And he was just, all spit and hiss, and he was malnourished, but he had this unique attitude where nothing fazed him. He wanted to keep fighting, and he wanted despite his rough beginnings to keep going. And so he captured our hearts immediately. And so he lived with us in our clouder. and then around 11 years of age, he developed diabetes. I have a longer journey that I can talk about. But for right now, his journey was, we were managing his diabetes, and more and more insulin had to be used, and it was determined that he was insulin resistant. And some of his features were pointing to that acromegaly. And so under the guidance of, an internal medicine veterinarian, he was diagnosed with acromegaly, and so we were treating both.
Well, this is not completely uncommon, and diabetes itself in cats is, I've called it an epidemic, and I'm on the board of the National Association for Pet Obesity Prevention, which ties into all of this, because we have so many overweight and obese cats in America, and that's a separate topic, but it's kind of not, because those cats are the ones by far, that are very likely to be diagnosed as diabetic. So I have a couple of questions
Absolutely.
For you. Yeah. How can you tell that, okay, something is wrong here and my cat, aside from just the cat may be overweight or obese right there, but that the cat may be diabetic?
That is a great question. You are absolutely right. Obesity is an epidemic in our feline and our canine populations. We're 62% of cats coming into hospitals are overweight or obese. And so there's a risk factor right there. But oftentimes owners will notice, he seems to be going to the litter box a lot more. He seems to be drinking a lot more. I don't remember that, or going to play at his fountain a lot more often. Some of them tend to eat more, but cats being cats, some of them don't follow that and they don't eat as much. So it really is changes in the cat's activity, and most certainly in their urinary habits, meaning increased, and their drinking habits.
And I could add one more to that, that sometimes cats thinking outside the litter box having accidents because they're drinking so much that maybe they cannot make it to the litter box. All right, so that happens. A veterinarian then says, uh-oh, your cat is diabetic. Our stomach falls out, you know? I mean, that feeling you get like, oh, no. So what can currently we do for diabetic cats?
Currently, for diabetic cats, they're... you know, the standard of care really is insulin. And of course, you knew I was going to bring this up, but we can also help to manage diabetes through nutrition. And so with insulin and nutrition, we can get them to a stable place.
Oh, and but, sometimes, I'm interrupting for a reason here.
No,
because I have to break in a few seconds. But sometimes, actually, we can help that diabetes go into remission. That's one side of that coin. But the other side of the coin is things can get worse, which happened with your cat. So we'll talk about both sides of that coin and what we might be able to do in the future when we come back. And also an exciting announcement to make with Kara Burns on WGN. As much as I am an advocate for dogs, I mean, you all know that, I'm also an advocate for you being responsible and picking up after your dogs. You know what? Dog waste is in too many places around the Chicago area, in the city, in the suburbs, almost everywhere. And there are lots of reasons for that, including our own health. The stuff can get into the waterways eventually. Also there, it can cause harm to fish, aquatic ecosystems, help to create algal blooms. But also, we can be impacted. Roundworm eggs like to hatch out of dog feces. Hookworm, potentially the same thing. We don't see a lot of that in Chicago. Giardia, we do see a lot of. And Giardia can carry this parasite, or rather, the dog feces can carry this parasite as well that causes Giardia in people and in dogs. But it's something we need to do something about. Now, other countries have stepped up and said, enough is enough. Municipalities in Spain have adopted one of the toughest systems anywhere. Madrid and Barcelona have piloted DNA databases of registered dogs. Dogs in these places must register or face a fine. When uncollected waste is found, it can be tested and matched to the dog's DNA profile on record. If there's a match, there's a corresponding fine. No surprise, the system has dramatically increased the number of people who are now responsible and picking up as a result. In Italy, Rome and Florence now have strict enforcement. Dog owners must carry bags when walking dogs and show the bags to the police. Police can ask, where's your bag? Some cities have experimented with DNA registries there as well. In dog-loving France and Paris in particular, once famous for people almost proudly not picking up. That was the case in France years ago, but today, cameras are everywhere, and not only are cameras there to identify crime, and by the way, they consider now not picking up after your dog a crime. So you can be fined if someone sees you on camera or can prove that you didn't pick up after your dog. In the U.S., some cities or condo associations, at least, or gated communities, are beginning to strictly enforce these rules. When will culture catch up in the U.S.? That remains unclear, but I'm all for people picking up after your dogs. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, and my guest is Kara Burns, who is the incoming chair, as in chairman of the board. Right? It's not that you bring a chair with you and you have a new chair.
So, I hope I get a chair.
So I'm talking now with Kara Burns, who will receive a chair with the Every Cat Health Foundation, a nonprofit that does a whole lot for cats. That's an understatement. Funds cat health studies, educates veterinary professionals and others about cats. In fact, we hold, I say we because I'm on the board, webinars all the time. You can check out most of them. In fact, all of them are free. And you could check them out at everycat.org, where you can also sign up for a newsletter, get some exciting information that we'll tell you about in a moment. We're talking first, though, about diabetes in cats. And you're saying that insulin and diet can help. But for a lot of cats, I don't know, maybe you know the percent, I don't, but it's significant, number of cats that don't have other medical issues necessarily, there's good news. So with a change in diet, with insulin treatment, and with weight loss, and I'll add one thing more to that, that's a bit of exercise. Yes, you can exercise your cats. All of that combined.
You certainly can.
Yeah, so with all of that combined, some of these cats go into remission, and some of that time, remission is forever, Kara.
That is very true. Being in the nutrition world, I have seen that happen with nutrition. And you're right. Oftentimes we can combine insulin and nutrition and help and weight management and exercise and help that. And help that cat get into remission. And when I'm saying, exercise and, weight management, that's what I mean by lifestyle, when I'm talking about feline, diabetes. And again, the majority of the cats have that lifestyle, that type 2 diabetes. Whereas on the flip side of that are some other disease conditions that result in the cat becoming, insulin resistant. But, it is phenomenal that we have veterinary medicine, we have medicine and owners that are willing to, to put the time in to help their cat, and that can lead to remission. So, for cat owners, typically it's tough to hear, like you mentioned earlier, that your cat has diabetes, because along with that will be, once or twice a day insulin injections, weight loss, increased activity, and a special diet.
However, those injections may not always be easy to give. However, individual cats don't respond like we'd like them to respond. However, some cats, in fact, some, meaning a fair number, again, I don't know the data on this, actually don't go into remission. And there are a lot of cats where we just can't get the weight down. And that is, along with cats that become insulin resistant, those are the cats that with the O'Malley Fund that you've kicked off that we're looking for answers for. Is that right?
Yes. So the O'Malley Fund is for diabetes, yes, and endocrinopathy, so other types of endocrine issues. But my particular story is about O'Malley, who has diabetes, but it was insulin resistant due to acromegaly. So, he was on a special diet. He was getting insulin. We did get some weight off of him, but he did not go into remission because of, this secondary issue, if you will.
So what are we looking for to fund studies that can help us better understand this, as well as other conditions that have to do, as you say, not necessarily diabetes?
Yeah, so with, endocrinopathies, we're, think about things like hyperthyroidism along with, diabetes. And I want, Ellen and I want O'Malley and his name, his spirit to spearhead this, you know, this fundraising, because there are a number of issues, diabetes being one, and that's why I am so passionate about this. But, you know, a number of disease conditions and issues that hopefully the O'Malley Fund can raise funds for continued research into, you know, diabetes and other endocrinopathies.
Well, when you mentioned I'm thinking hyperthyroid, like you said. First of all, the Ellen you mentioned is Dr. Ellen Lowry. So
yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
No, that's okay. Like you, a superstar in veterinary medicine. But let me talk a little bit about hyperthyroid disease. Hyperthyroid disease, sure. If you have a cat over the age, I don't know, is it 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there, and cats are living longer than ever before, hyperthyroid disease is actually incredibly common in cats of a certain age. We do have treatments for those, but again, prevention would be really nice, wouldn't it?
Yes. Absolutely. Hyperthyroidism is the number one endocrine disease in cats, with diabetes following, you know, right behind. So, there's, and, you know, I mentioned acromegaly. That is another one. Cats do get Cushing's, but really it's hyperthyroidism and diabetes are the top two. And, you know, in the year 2026, I think, you know, with the right amount of funding or truly the right or more research, we should be able to move the needle on these disease conditions.
Oh, I think we can. You know, the Every Cat Health Foundation, when we began a fund called the BRIA Fund for Feline Infectious Peritonitis, I don't know what year that was, 2003 maybe? I don't know, somewhere in there. We were told, oh gosh, you guys are crazy. We are never, ever going to find a treatment for feline infectious peritonitis. Yet we did. It took years, and it took a fair amount of money, but we did. Same thing for heart disease, and we're not done with that one at all. This is just the start. The fund that I began, called the Ricky Fund, well over 20 years ago, told the same thing. There's never going to be a solution to this. So I want to talk about not only a potential solution for diabetes, beside weight control, but there are possibilities that are being worked on right now. The GLP-1 drugs that people have, there will be one for cats in the not-too-distant future. We'll talk about that. But also I want to talk about the suffering involved when cats do have diabetes, the suffering for the cats, but our wallets too. So if we could prevent that, a whole lot more cats will live. Talking to Kara Burns, and we'll be right back on WGN. Kara Burns is a registered veterinary technician, the specialist in nutrition. Yeah, a specialist in nutrition, who is a multi award winner. How do you even have room in your house for all these awards? I don't know. And I am so proud to say my colleague on the board of directors, in fact, she's the incoming chair of the Every Cat Health Foundation, and began a fund called the O'Malley Fund, named for her now deceased cat, O'Malley, who I know meant a lot to you and Ellen and your entire family, Kara. And you said, I want to do something about it, and you're doing something about it. You know, cats with diabetes don't feel that great, and people who have diabetes can probably describe better than I can what that must be like on a day-to-day basis, except they can't watch their own insulin. We have to watch it for them. And some of this treatment that we're just, you know, throwing out there, this, it's not that easy always to do. And then there's the financial part of all this as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not all that easy. And, you know, some of us in veterinary medicine are like, oh, yeah, we just give an injection. But we have to take a step back and remember, not everyone knows or is comfortable with doing that. You know, giving an injection of insulin to your cat once or twice a day, that's, you know, that takes a lot of learning, and you know, someone has to be willing to do that. And on top of that, the cost associated with insulin. So I know that many people want to do whatever is needed, but some people are squeamish around needles, and some people, you know, maybe can't truly afford the insulin that is needed for their pet. And then you couple that with special nutrition for your diabetic pet, and it can become overwhelming at times.
Absolutely. Absolutely true, Kara. And the other thing is, I mean, we talked about hyperthyroid disease, and I don't mean to discount that, but hyperthyroid disease, at least, oh, this is going to come out wrong no matter how I say it, but at least those cats are older cats. A 3-year-old cat is not likely to be diagnosed with hyperthyroid disease. They're almost always older cats, if not geriatric cats in some cases. It's different for diabetes in cats. Those cats can be older, but they very well can be very young as well. So you're talking about a lifetime of this treatment, which sometimes these cats, it's not only the finances of doing this for 15 years, but it's also, in fact, shelters get cats that are diagnosed with diabetes because people can't handle the finances as well as just can't handle dealing with it sometimes, Kara.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about your schedule. If you, you know, have a cat that needs twice a day injections of insulin and has to have food, you know, in conjunction with that insulin injection, then that has to be scheduled because it has to be given at the same, consistency is key, has to be given at the same time every day. And, you know, that can certainly mess up someone's schedule. But again, it comes back to, you know, people want to do what's in the best interest of their pet. And so I know the majority of people do try to manage their pet's diabetes. But it does not come without, you know, a lot of overwhelming factors.
Well,
schedule being one of them.
Yep. Everycat.org. Everycat.org to learn more.
Yes.
Just look under special funds. You will see the O'Malley Fund. And Kara will not fight you if you want to donate some money to that. Now.
No, I am so honored that the Everycat Health Foundation, supported me in this. So I appreciate even just going on to the Everycat site and looking and seeing what it's all about.
Fair enough. We have a special announcement to make, and we only have a few minutes to do it. At North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine, in conjunction with their Feline Center for Veterinary Medicine and the Everycat Health Foundation, you are among the speakers at an upcoming symposium at NC State, but you don't have to go there. You can watch it all online. It's called the Healthy Aging Symposium. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. The Healthy Aging Symposium, we are so looking forward to that. And we being Everycat Health Foundation, and I can't speak for them, but I know that North Carolina State University's Feline Health Center is also pretty excited about it. So this is our third year partnering together, and, you know, we were just talking about two disease conditions that are seen, you know, more often in older or aging cats, but again, diabetes can be seen at any age, but, you know, so we're going to focus on, you know, different disease conditions and, you know, trying to get across that old age or older age, that's not a disease. We can help, you know, to manage a number of different diseases, and we're going to talk about that. You know, obviously, I'm going to cover some of the nutrients and the nutrition in our aging pets, but there are so many other top-notch speakers that will be there. And I believe Mr. Steve Dale will be talking on behavior at that conference.
Yeah, the importance of enrichment is true for any cat of any age, but how do you do that with older cats? By the way, the event is April 10th and 11th, and to learn more about that, also go to the Every Cat website, and that's everycat.org. Among the other topics being discussed, we mentioned a bunch of them: diabetes, hyperthyroid disease, heart disease in cats. All of these things are more likely, except diabetes, which can occur to any cat of any age, but more likely to occur with older cats. And the good news, Kara, is our cats are living longer than ever before, but because they do, they don't escape cancers, for example.
Right.
All of these things will be talked about, correct?
Yes, yes. And you know, on the one hand, it's a testament to veterinary medicine and everyone associated with it that cats are living so much longer. But as they live longer, we start to see, you know, more and more potential issues. So they will be covered. I believe joint disease is also going to be covered. And so, you know, I invite everyone, whether you're a veterinary professional, a cat enthusiast, a cat breeder, someone who just likes animals, to check out the website, everycat.org, and see what this conference is all about. We would love to have you attend.
And by the way, if you're a veterinary professional, you can get continuing education credits for this. And that, again, is everycat.org. Kara, congratulations on the O'Malley Fund, something I promise we will continue to talk about. Thank you, Kara. Coyotes generally mate in January or February. They give birth around 63 days later, so that means right about now. Through the end of May, coyotes give birth, which means they have to feed those pups, usually about 4 to 7 pups per litter. That means both mom and dad are out there working to get food for their pups. You are not on the menu, but how about your dog? Please, if there are ever coyotes around, remember to supervise your dog, especially a smaller mid-sized dog, in the backyard. If you're out there and a coyote comes, make a lot of noise, blow a whistle, jump up and down, throw pots and pans together to make noise. All of that is called hazing, actually, and is likely to scare a coyote away. One more thing, if you can, keep your cat indoors. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.